Welcome to another exciting episode of the podcast, The Thought Leader Revolution. I'm your host, Nikki Ballou. And boy, do we have an exciting guest lined up for you today. His personal story of triumph over adversity is going to touch your soul. I am speaking, of course, of none other than the one, the only, Dr. William Belfour. Welcome to the show, William.
Great to be here, Nikki. Wonderful. And this gives me the opportunity to share with you and your audience how to turn a mess into success.
I love it. I love it. So, William, the men and women who listen to this show are, with the exception of the great people that fight, bleed, and die for us to be free, society's greatest heroes. They're the entrepreneurs that have a dream and the courage to go and pursue that dream and through that make the world a better place. They listen to this show, not because of me, because I'm here every week. They listen to this show because of you. They want to get to know you. They want to know what your special brand of genius is and how they can learn from you and apply it in their own lives. But before they can do that, they got to get to know you. How'd you get to be the great William Belfour?
Okay. So Netflix recently came out with a series called Painkillers, which starring Matthew Broderick. And in that series, it shows how the pharmaceutical companies influenced a lot of doctors to write opiates for patients. Many of those doctors got in trouble. In fact, some lost their license and some got arrested. I'm a real life version of one of those doctors. 10 years ago, I was arrested by the FBI for writing prescriptions of oxycodone. At first, I thought I was doing the patients a lot of good and treating their pain. But then I realized that I was only contributing to their addictions. And I tried to stop. I tried to get away from it. I even changed states. I even moved. But my problems just followed me. So 2 years after I moved, while feeling pressured, I wrote a prescription for oxycodone to somebody I had written prescriptions for in Massachusetts who showed up at my office. Soon after I did that, I was arrested by the FBI. And the day I was arrested, I thought was the worst day of my life, but things only got worse. You see, I was a neurologist and a psychiatrist trained at both NYU and the Johns Hopkins Medical Center. I had a thriving practice, neurology and psychiatry practice on Park Avenue in Manhattan. And after I was arrested, I lost everything. I lost my practice. I lost my patients. I lost my livelihood. I lost my money. I lost my family. I lost my home. I became homeless. I even had to give away my dogs just for their safety because it wasn't even safe to live with me where I was living. However, I did not let these series of events define who I am. Today, I am the clinical director of New Beginnings, a group of mental health clinics that's spreading throughout this country. I have my home back. I have my son back. My family's back. My dogs are back. Financially, I'm more than stable. I'm doing fine. And I've just been progressing in my life. I've been interviewed on television. I've even spoke recently at the Mexican Academy of Medicine and also the Mexican Stock Exchange. And the way I came back and what I've been through, I put it all down in a book. My book has just come out on Amazon. It's called Mess to Success, How to Overcome Adversity. And I've found a formula for overcoming adversity, which I'd like to share with you and your audience. And that formula I call ACCEPT, A-C-C-E-P-T. So the A is admit you did something wrong. Take full responsibility for your actions and everything that you've done. Because don't blame other people. At one time, I was blaming the FBI, I was blaming my patients, I was blaming everyone except myself. Once I took full responsibility, I was able to get back on my feet. C, cut out all toxic people from your life. Anybody you're hanging around with who's doing criminal behaviors, using drugs, using alcohol, get them out of your life, cut them out of your life, and also cut out any drugs or alcohol that you're doing or any destructive behaviors you're doing, including eating bad foods or poor nutritious foods. C, contribute. Even though you did something wrong, even if you hit rock bottom, you still have your talents, your education, your values, your skills. Don't forget that you still have them all. And you can contribute to society and to others and to yourself with that. The E, exercise. In order to turn your life from mess to success, you need your body in good physical shape. You need to exercise. Do the best you can. Run, walk, go to the gym if you can. And also, again, watch what you eat. P, purpose. This is a secret. You need a purpose in life. Everybody has a purpose. Not everybody knows what their purpose is. It's the reason you get up in the morning. It's what gets you by obstacles. It's what will keep you going no matter what. And T, try and try again. Don't ever give up. I could have stopped. Other people in my situation who've done what I've done, they've given up on life. Some of them have even taken their lives. Do not give up. Just keep trying. And when I say that, look, after this happened to me, I was turned down for employment. I was turned down for jobs. I was turned down for housing. I wasn't treated well by a lot of people, but I never gave up. And because of that, I was able to turn everything around. And now that's where I am. That's why I am where I am today. And that's the formula.
That's a heck of a story, man. So let's backtrack a little bit and unpack a bit of what you said. So you're this doctor who's got a thriving practice in one of the most exclusive places in the world, New York City, Manhattan, Park Avenue. What made you believe that you needed to write these prescriptions that your training had probably told you weren't necessary to be written?
Okay, well, this is where, you know, I'm not making excuses and I take full responsibility for what I did. But this is an issue, an incident where my personal life collided with my professional life. Mm. So after I finished my training, I became the director of forensic psychiatry at the Westchester County Jail. I had a very big position, like even before I graduated, and I developed a practice very quickly and it just boomed. However, even though my professional life was skyrocketing, my personal life was just in a downward spiral. I was involved in a very acrimonious divorce and custody battle, which lasted almost 10 years. And I think what really kind of did me in was when my ex-wife relocated with my son from New York to Massachusetts. Now, I ended up moving to Massachusetts, yet I was trying to run and manage a practice in New York. So it was very hard. And I was actually at one point a single parent in Massachusetts while trying to run a practice in New York. I did have coverage for me. And what happened was the CEO of a hospital I was working with decided that he wanted me in the hospital and not the people covering for me. And I told him, well, I can't come back because right now I have to watch my son. So he basically said to me, choose between the hospital and your son. So I said, well, I'm choosing my son. The next thing you know, he throws all my doctors out of the hospital and sues me for $10 million in a frivolous lawsuit. However, this kind of wiped out my practice and wiped me out overnight. I had a multi-million dollar practice. And then there was stuff put up on the internet about me, and I became very depressed. And I went and got a job at a hospital up in Massachusetts. And during that time in the hospital, and I did that to save my practice in New York, I met somebody, a nurse, who I told about my situation. And she says, well, you know, you're a Park Avenue doctor. I could help you start a clinic up here. So, you know, look, I wasn't thinking correctly and my judgment was kind of off, but I did. And, you know, and I was started, she started bringing me patients and I was, you know, started a pain clinic. I didn't even know much about the stuff at the time, the oxycodone. And people were paying me $1,000 to come see me. And my goal at the time was to get back to New York. Now, that's kind of why, this is my story of why it happened with me. Other people, there's different stories. What happened was I finally was able to convince my ex-wife to let me move down to New York with my son. You know, but by that time it was too late. And then 2 years later, the FBI came knocking at my door and arrested me. So even though, I mean, yes, it looks like I was this Park Avenue doctor, thriving practice, had all this great education, you know, both a neurologist and psychiatrist, you know, NYU, Boston University I was at, and the Johns Hopkins Medical Center, you know, I'm still a human being. My personal stuff caught up with me and everything collided. Yeah. And so that's what happened. My situation. I can't talk about other doctors.
Yeah. Well, William, you know, I come from a family that's been involved in the medical business. My mother was an ER nurse for 25 years. And my dad in Iran used to equip hospitals with all their equipment. So I spent a lot of time in that world. And there seems to be a sense until very recently, the doctors were almost gods in a way. They were not mere mortals, that they knew more, they were smarter, they were better, but they're just human beings. Like you said, you're just a human being. And because of that perception by a lot of people, doctors are isolated from non-doctors. And it sounds like you were isolated because you were going through a divorce. I'll tell you this, I was going through a divorce at one point in my life, and what I did is I got involved with a men's group run by a man who helped people like me who were going through relationship turmoil. And that experience of having a dozen of us talking about these issues helped me navigate through those and avoid making a lot of dumb decisions, which I otherwise would have made. You know what I mean? And I don't know what your situation was like. I don't know if you were part of anything like that, but I suspect not. And I suspect if you had been part of something like that and you had men around you, one of them would have smacked you upside the head and go and said, hey, William, don't do that shit. You know what I mean? You're going to mess things up even worse. Be smart. Right. And that to me is what's important to understand is just because someone is accomplished in one area of their life does not mean that they have that same godlike intelligence in all the other areas of their life. Just because you're a doctor of psychiatry and you're a neurologist doesn't mean you are an expert in keeping a relationship together in a tough situation. And I think that's a very humanizing thing, not just for you, but for anyone listening to this episode who maybe they're a doctor themselves, maybe they know doctors. Man, look at doctors as human beings. They're just people. They do great things and they do terrible things, just like all people.
Absolutely. And you're right. I mean, I was not a part of that group. There was a feeling of great feeling of isolation. I mean, I was, you know, taking care of my son. I was very worried about him at the time. You know, my main support system was my aunt, who lived to 101 years old. Wow. And she had died a couple of years earlier. She lived on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. And you talk about somebody slapping me in the face, she would have. Even at age 100, she would have definitely slapped me in the face had she, you know, been alive. So, yeah, and I did feel isolated. That's a very good point that you're making.
Yeah, so you went through this. Walk us through what it was like, you know, after you were arrested, after you lost all the moorings to your old identity.
Okay. So it was just a living nightmare. I can't really describe it any other way. You know, when the day I was arrested, you know, I was, this is a story in itself, and it just went down after that. They came to my house 7 in the morning, knocked on my door. I come downstairs wearing like shorts and my t-shirt. I open the door and six or seven FBI agents come running in with, you know, semi-automatic rifles and wearing goggles and shields and stuff. And, you know, they kind of threw me against the wall. Say, "You Dr. Belfour? Yes, you're under arrest." You know, I saw my son walking down the stairs and he started, crying. And it was, you know, he's watching his father get arrested. And, you know, I remember going in the car, you know, being put in the back seat in the car. And then it's funny, there was an agent sitting next to me and two in the front. And this is just an idea of how my mind was working. They stopped the car on the highway. They were taking me from Long Island to New York City. And they said, "Pull over." And I was freaking out because, you know, what was going through my head? That scene from The Godfather where they shot Paulie, where Clemenza pulled over.
Yeah.
You know, take the guns, leave the cannolis. And, you know, I was like, "Are you real cops? Are you real?" You know, and then they said, "Well, who do you think we are?" I mean, the whole thing was surreal. And then being in the cell, like, and I was only there for 5 hours. I got released. And I never went back to prison or jail or anything. But, you know, it's still a story. But after that, I remember I did not eat for 2 days. I did not go to the bathroom for 2 days. I was in shock. I got home. I got released on bail or partial bail. And then there was just such, like, fear in me and, like, disappointment in me. And it's like every day was like another something else was going wrong. So, like, first I got arrested, then a doctor who worked for me was, you know, trying to take my practice away. I still had my license at the time, but it was restricted, you know. So, and then all of a sudden I got thrown out of Medicaid and Medicare, and then little by little the insurance companies kept throwing me out, and then there were things put up on the internet about me. So even if I went and looked on the internet, you'd see, like, you know, crooked psychiatrist arrested. And, you know, it's like everybody turned on me. You know, it's just like everything turned on me. And, you know, my son stayed with me, but, you know, even it affected him in such a way. And I got arrested 4 days before he graduated high school. I mean, I didn't even think I was going to go to his graduation, but they let me out. And even my lawyer turned on me, kind of. You know, everybody was, like, so disappointed. And then, like, all of a sudden, I had no income coming in. I was living off my savings. I didn't want to live where I was. I had, like, another place up in Massachusetts where I was able to live. I had rented it out. Fortunately, the tenants weren't there anymore. I went up there. I was so isolated. And I remember, like, talking to a therapist. I mean, this is when it got, you know, really bad. I was in that house for like a week, you know, weeks at a time by myself. And then I'd look forward to like one session to talk to this guy once a week for an hour. That's how bad. It's like I isolated myself. Mm. And, you know, it's like I caused my own isolation. It's almost like I punished myself. It was so bad. And then, like, I would see my son every now and then because, you know, I had my visitation with him. And, you know, it was just a mess. And then we were back in Massachusetts. Ended up back in Massachusetts again. But then a number of months later, I finally did lose my medical license. I didn't lose it. I surrendered it, which actually was bad advice from my attorney because I really shouldn't have surrendered my license. But then, you know, that's when I think my identity really, really left, when I surrendered my medical license. Because, you know, I guess I had defined myself always as a doctor, you know, as not only a doctor, like a big shot doctor, you know, a guy, you know, that's how I was, you know, I let that define me, which, now I've learned so much, it's a mistake to do that. But that's who I was. You know, I was Dr. William Belfar, neurologist, psychiatrist, and, you know, Johns Hopkins graduate. Basically, nobody could tell me anything. I think I knew everything I was so sure of. But, you know, now I was like nothing. And it lasted for a while. I didn't work for a couple of years. I was living off my savings. Started working again. And then I got in with the wrong people. You know, things were just bad. And I was depressed. I had anxiety. I developed panic attacks. I know I had PTSD because I would get flashbacks and nightmares. And, you know, I had everything. So and why, to make, what? Go ahead.
I just have a question here. This is blowing me away. Why would the FBI send a SWAT team to the house of a doctor? Couldn't they just have contacted an attorney and said, hey, surrender yourself to the authorities? You weren't exactly a threat, a physical threat to these guys. Why would they do that?
Well, here's another question I have for you. At the same time the SWAT team came to my house, why did they have to go to my office with shotguns and scare the crap out of my patients who were waiting there? They did that too.
Yeah, that's kind of disgusting.
And right in front of my son, too. There was really no reason to do that. It was all for humiliation. And, you know, it was the event that caused me the PTSD. And, you know, that it's the whole thing. It's to humiliate. It's just to humiliate. And, you know, some of my patients, look, you got to remember, I was a psychiatrist. I was treating patients with mental illness. Imagine some of them seeing people coming in with shotguns to their doctor's office. You don't think that affected them? And I heard about it.
Yeah, that's wrong. Honestly, Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri has said that if the Republican Party regains the majority in the Senate, he's going to introduce legislation to break up the FBI and scatter it to the winds, into 1,000 pieces and scatter it to the winds. And, you know, in the past, I've been a champion and a fan of the FBI's. I mean, they were the good guys. They took care of the bad guys, kept us safe. But I mean, when they go after people, yeah, okay, you broke the law. I get it. But you send people with shotguns after guys who already have shotguns and could possibly shoot you. You don't send people with shotguns after a family man with a child. It's ridiculous. That's my take on it.
Which is a very fair take. And that, you know, this is what happened. These are the facts. This is what happened.
So how did you come to the inflection point to say, enough wallowing in self-pity, I got to pick myself up and recreate myself? What made that possible?
I mean, I think there were kind of a few inflection points. So let me just say it wasn't just one point. Because when I said, again, try and try again,
yep,
there were a few points where I felt like, you know, this is it. I can't take it. You know, one point was when I had to go get food at a church and I was getting, you know, canned food, like corn. And I was like, I can't live like this. I remember I started like crying for that. And, you know, that's how bad it got. You know, I rented from certain places, had horrible landlords at times, had to live with some really bad people. It got bad. But then I think what happened was I finished my probation early. In fact, I was okay. So I was sentenced to 5 years of probation, 400 hours of community service, and a $400 fine. And some people were like, oh, you know, it's too lenient. But I had a really good judge. He was an excellent judge. And I worked my community service. I actually worked with my court-appointed therapist, working with other patients who were on probation or parole. And because of that exceptional behavior on my part, because I used my skills as part of my community service, you know, I was written up by the probation officers and by the therapist how great a job I did and how influential I was with the patients. And because of that, the judge terminated my probation in only half the time. So I did only 2.5 years. Now, that was one turning point, because being on probation is just horrible. I don't care what anyone says, you know, oh, you're not in prison. It's horrible. Because if you have police contact, you'll go back to prison. If you go outside a certain border without asking permission, you'll go to jail. So you're kind of in prison, even though you're not in prison. So that at least, relieved me of some stuff. I was able to get a job. I was able to get a job because these people knew me. But then the owner of this was kind of an elderly woman who was kind of making like passes at me. And I actually got terminated because I didn't want to walk in Central Park with her. So after that, you know, I was on unemployment. The whole thing was horrible. And I don't know. I just said, look, don't stop. Just keep looking for work or keep looking for something. And then one day, when I had the job, let me go back a second. My son moved down from Boston with me. And he got my dogs back. So now I was reunited with my family. And now I was working. So I was working at that job before she fired me. That was a big turning point because I was able to stabilize myself for a while. Then I got destabilized again when she fired me. But I think I was a lot saner at the time. I was thinking a lot more rationally. And yes, I was on unemployment for a little while. But then, I don't know, I was playing with Facebook one day, and I saw somebody who I used to work with. And I just sent him a message, and he said, are you still in New York? So I said, yeah. He said, excellent. And then he said, remember my friend? I said, yes. And he goes, I'm going to hook you up with him because you can work with him. They hired me. This was a new beginning. They hired me as a counselor at first. I really showed my value there. And now, you know, it's only a year and a half later, and I'm the clinical director of the place. And I'm not only clinical director, I'm like an ambassador. I've made a lot of, you know, I spoke on television for them. Now I'm doing, again, the podcast. You know, but this is really my story. You know, it's new beginnings. And that's what it was. It was a new beginning for me. And through that, and, you know, I've developed my other skills and everything to really the point. It is now 1.5 years later when I started. I was down to my last $1,000. October of 2022, I was down to my last $1,000. And I was scared because, you know, I was living with my son and I say, uh-oh. But I reached out, got the job, and now I'm financially free, to be honest with you.
God bless you, brother.
I mean, even it, you know, I have passive income enough now to cover my expenses. So what I did was I found the opportunity. I showed, you remember I said contribute? I showed them my value and I just soared with it. And that led to actually me getting back together with Raymond Aaron, who you know.
Very well.
And you know, can I, do you mind if I show you the product of with what happened Raymond Aaron? Yeah. There it is, Mess to Success. You see, forward by Raymond Aaron, Mess to Success. I deal with it. This is it. This is my story. But it also has a formula, has even a better formula in it for how anybody can do it. You know, Raymond was a big part of my life. In fact, that's how I met you, who you have become a big part of my life now, too. A very big part. You're like Raymond on steroids in some ways.
Raymond and I are peas in a pod. We definitely share a very similar desire to be of service to people. And he's a good man. God bless him. I got to know him when he was going to do that crazy polar race. I used to be a fitness trainer back then, and he hired me to get him ready for it. And I'm like, you're crazy. You're freaking 62. You're fat. You're out of shape. What are you doing? He goes, I'm going to do it. I said, okay, let's get to work. It took us 2 years to get him in the shape, man. 2 freaking years. But he did it. God bless
him. But he did it. He did it. And you know what? So that goes along with, you know, my book goes a little more deeper than into the formula I gave. And that's another part of it is like you need to cut out all the toxic people in your life, but you also need to attract very positive people in your life. And, you know, and Raymond was a big influence on me. You're a big influence on me. Teresa's a big influence on me now. And I got many others. You know, some of the ways people can, even if like you don't know somebody, get into that program. You could actually pay for a support system. You know, just think about it. People don't even think of that. It's worth paying money to be around the right people.
Brother, it one way or another, it's going to cost something. You must invest. You're either going to invest your time, your energy, or your money, or all three, or some combination of two of the three. But it's what it takes to be successful. If you don't have a lot of money right now, listen to free podcasts of positive people. Raymond has a great podcast. I have a great podcast. There's lots of great podcasts out there, right? You know, if you have only a little bit of money, buy books. Books are cheap. For between 10 and 40 bucks, you can get a lot, 10 to 12 hours of positivity out of the right book, right? That's incredible. Very, very, very small investment for a big, big return. But if you have access to more money, you can invest, you know, a few hundred or a few thousand or tens of thousands, man, you can really turn your life around. And I believe as a business owner, the most important investment you can make is in yourself. You're the most important asset in your business. You, my friend, are the very definition of grit. Adversity hit you. You were at a very, very high place in life. You made some mistakes. You got caught out by those mistakes. Life humbled you. You had a choice. You could have said, you know what? I'm going to crawl into a hole and that's all she wrote. It's over. Or you could say, hey, I got knocked down by life. I'm getting up and I'm going to be bigger, better, stronger than before. And to tell you the truth, William, I didn't know you back then, but I like the William that I have met today. You're a good man. You're smart. You're accomplished. All the things you did to become, you know, a doctor, a psychiatrist, a neurologist, all those are there. All that incredible learning is there. But there's a humility and a love that emanates from you that I don't know if it would have been there back then or not. But I'm going to hallucinate that it's there in a strong way today because of what you went through.
Oh, yeah. Look, it really wasn't there. It's there now. And let me tell you the other magic of this about turning one's life around. So after my life was turned around, I was able to assist others to do so. And there's was a 26-year-old man that I met, that I knew, not that I met, I knew this person, and he wanted to, he was working in a warehouse. He was working in a warehouse of a steel factory, and he's somebody who had just graduated college. And he was really down and out, and he was making a dollar less than minimum wage. Wow. And barely able to pay the rent. I got together with him. I started influencing him. He listened. In May 2024, he's going to graduate from law school.
Wow, brother.
Now, to make this even more magical, this person happens to be my son.
Wow. That's incredible, man.
And he's not the only one. Remember I told you that I did community service? And these are just a couple of examples. I told you I did community service with people who are on probation or parole. There was a gentleman who's 29 years old. He was drafted by the Philadelphia Phillies. He came from Dominican Republic. But when he came here, he injured his arm and his whole career was ruined. So he, you know, he couldn't play baseball.
That's terrible.
And he got involved, you know, to survive. He got involved. I don't remember if he transported drugs or transported money. It was something. But he was arrested by the feds. He did some time in prison. And then he still had to finish out his sentencing. And he was on parole. And he still had, he had to wear an ankle bracelet. He was on house arrest. Except for, you know, he had to support himself. And he worked for Instacart. And, you know, he was not making much money. But it was enough to barely, where he could barely support himself. And he was able to save some money. But he had a sharp mind. And I saw it. And I introduced him to like an e-commerce program. So December of 2023, he finished his sentencing. He went back to Dominican Republic. But by November of 2023, he was financially free from his e-commerce business.
That's incredible.
And he was, you know, making more money than his probation officers and everyone who was, you know, who he had to answer to. So, you know, and he said, he told me I was a very big influence on him. And so here is a guy who really had not had things, you know, it was even worse situation than me, who turned his life around. And also he had lost his job at Instacart because they found his record. So they fired him. But by that time it didn't matter because he had taken the money that he had earned and invested it into the e-commerce building business.
That's incredible, man. That's absolutely incredible. So, William, tell us a bit about the book and how people can get a hold of the book.
All right. So the book has now, it's out on Amazon. Best of Success by Dr. William Belfar. The book, you know, I go into a lot more depth about exactly what happened to me and my feelings. Let me tell you the good thing about this book. I wrote a lot of it while I was going through a depression and panic attacks and anxiety. So it's real. You know, it's like I was living it, you know, that's how I'm describing some of the things as I was living it. You know, it's to me, it's more genuine than thinking back of the way I was. So that's part of it. But it helps you really design a roadmap. And I even use that acronym roadmap, which is a little more than accept, to go into exactly how to recognize that something's wrong. So for example, I was arrested, right? And yes, I was arrested, but that wasn't the poison, the toxin that was in me. The toxin that was in me was the way I was feeling about myself, the PTSD, the self-loathing, the guilt, the disgust at what I did. That's what hurt me, you know, more so than the act itself. And it's something I had to realize was tearing me apart. And yes, and I did get rid of all the toxic influences in my life. And I did attract new people into my life. It's funny, I talk about drugs in it and alcohol, and I talk about medications in it, which I never took because they tried to give them to me and I got side effects after a day. So all this came without medications. You don't need medications. I can, you know, I'm a doctor saying this, but it's the truth. And I live this. And the other thing is I went to therapy, but that didn't help either. Because let me tell you why. it's hard for a psychiatrist to go to a therapist because they know what's going on. And a lot of times these therapists would start asking me questions about their patients. It's inappropriate. It's a border, you know, it's a border. I'm not a border, a boundary issue. It's a boundary issue. So even that happened. And so really the therapy didn't help me either. What helped me was really to pull myself back together, to fix up my external environment, which helped my internal environment, although it was my internal environment helping. It just kind of worked together. Then the activities I did were very helpful. The exercising I did, I'm learning a lot about, you know, diet and nutrition, which I've done. Since I think I've known you for the last couple of weeks, I've probably lost about 8 pounds, you know.
I love it.
And I know that you're bodybuilding now too, which I used to do. And believe me, that don't think that didn't influence me too. So, you know, all of that. And the purpose, I really have a purpose now. I have a purpose, a lot of things I have a purpose. This is one of my purposes, to show everyone that they can come back. It's just the way I am. I've always wanted to help the underdog. I like animals. One day I want to have I want to build an animal sanctuary for like those that are abused or lost. And, you know, I help people, I help animals. And that's my purpose. It's not so much about me anymore. I don't need the convertible BMW like I used to have. I don't need the 4,000 square foot house to live in by myself. You know, I'm actually, this is funny. Here I was almost homeless a year and a half ago. Now I'm about to move to Miami into a beautiful apartment, like a luxury apartment. But, you know, it's nice. It's really nice. And it's making me feel, again, messed to success. I could not have done this a few years ago. But to me, it's not the most important thing for me right now. I turned 60 recently. You know, when you're 30 years old, you say, oh, how am I going to plan my 30s and my 40s? Right? And you got a lot, you know, you really got the prime of your life. Now that I'm 60, well, so now it's how am I going to plan my 70s and my 80s? You know, I'm not going to be 40 again. And I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not going to be 30 again, but now what do I do? Do I do like others do? And it's like, you know, I'm old. Absolutely not. I'm not going to. I want to keep myself active. I want to beat my son in tennis again. That's what I want to do.
Good luck with that.
I mean, I did, and I tore my meniscus in my knee, but, you know, I want to do it again. I want to beat him. You know, 29 years old, I want to beat him again. And, you know, this is it. It doesn't matter what age you are. You know, yes, you have, there is realities. There is a reality. I'm not going to be I don't think I could leg press 700 pounds like I did in my mid-20s. I don't think I could do that. And I don't want my knees popping through my thighs.
Yeah, that's not important. That's an ego thing, honestly.
That's an ego thing. So like that, you know, I just want to stay in shape. I want longevity. I want to pass on. Because look, you know, when you're 60 years old, there are more people younger than you now than are older than you.
Yep, lots more.
Lots more. So that's where I am. And I still learn, you know, Raymond's, you know, yes, he's 80 years old. And he's wise. I'm not, you know, I don't have the wisdom he has. I've never been, you know. In some, you know, as much as my training and everything, I'm very educated, but I still learn. I learn a lot from you. I learn a lot from him. There's still a lot to learn. You know, this is what life is. You never know. You know, you can always keep learning. So, like, even now, I'm learning how to invest in stocks. I'm learning how to trade options. And, you know, part of me thinks, well, what happens if I break my hip? You know, what am I going to do? Well, maybe I can't go to work. But you know what? I can invest on it. All I need is a computer. So when other people, and I've worked in nursing homes, you know, I said, well, I can still trade stocks if I have to. It's a skill I'm developing now.
Amen, brother. Amen. So if people want to grab a copy of the book, Mess to Success, they go to Amazon. if there's anybody who's dealing with something and they need help in getting out of it, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Okay, very easy. Just go to williambelfarmd.com. William Belfar, www.williambelfarmd.com. That's my website. And right on the front page, just at the top, it says, just, you know, make an appointment. Or make a, I forget exactly what it says, or make a phone call. And I'll have a free phone call. It's right on the top. I'll have a free consultation with them for a half hour. Then, you know, I offer coaching. You'll see if they're a right fit. I'll have different programs. You know why? Because, like, even people who don't have that much money, I'm willing to work with them because I had no money. You know, then
that's a beautiful thing that you're willing to do. So what we're going to do is we're going to send people to williambelfarmd.com, book a call. So, listener, what you want to do is book that initial call. That's a complimentary free initial consult. So you're getting a trained neurologist, a trained psychiatrist. The man's got, you know, multiple doctorates for crying out loud, and he's willing to give you his time, complimentary. Take advantage of this. And so, William, we end every interview by asking you, as our guest expert, for bullet points, your top three expert action steps. So what say you?
My top three. Okay, and this is for your audience to do.
Yeah. But bullet points.
Well, first I would say if you're really down and out, just make an appointment with me. That's number one.
Yep.
If you don't have money, what you do have is, look, you've lived a life. There are many people that you've come across throughout your life. You have a data bank up here. Think who's been a positive influence on your life. And then try to get in touch with those people. Okay, because one of the things, and also get rid of the negative people in your life and don't listen to them. That's key. And you could get rid of the negative faster than you can attract the positive. So the first thing I would do is just get rid of any negative influences in your life, you know, as best as you can. If somebody's abusing you, just get away from them. If you have an abusive boss, look for another job. Don't stay in that situation. If your marriage is no good, well, first, you know, you could try counseling. If it doesn't work, then it's just not meant to be, you know? And you know, it's just something that, you know, but you work on it. If it doesn't work, then it's not good for either one of you, and it's not good for your children. So I would say, first, if you're so down and out, call me. Then get rid of toxic influences. And number three, it's just try and try again. Don't ever give up. Don't give up. Don't let anybody tell you to give up. If somebody says something negative to you, it's they're projecting themselves onto you. One thing I've learned is everything is a projection and nothing is personal. So in other words, if somebody's projecting that you're no good, you know, Robert Kiyosaki, he used to say, if somebody says you points at you and says about this with you, he's got one finger pointing at you and three fingers pointing back at himself.
Yeah.
So don't ever let anybody discourage you, no matter how bad things are, no matter how downtrodden you get, just keep trying. Don't stop. And even that word, try, yes, try. People say, oh, it's a bad word. It's a bad word. Eventually, you try and try and try. Eventually, you'll succeed. You know, it's not such a bad word. It's what you do. You know, just do it. And that's what I can say.
So it's a good expert action step. So I'm going to push back on one thing you said because I wholeheartedly disagree. If you're married and you have children, you absolutely owe it to your children to stay together. It's bullshit that you cannot stay together. It's bullshit that it's not working and it's better for the kids. Divorce is horrible for kids. All the statistics show it. Kids from divorced families do worse than kids from intact. I say this as a man who got divorced. It wasn't my choice, and I have the best divorce situation of anybody. I've gone on vacations with my ex and my current lady. Nobody else I know can say that. Children need their family to stay together. If you're a father or a mother and you have children, put your ego aside, figure out a way to get along with your spouse, and anybody can make anything work if they make a decision to do it. Your children deserve the very best. You should only leave if there is no choice. If the person is certifiably insane, or they're going to kill you or hurt you or your kids, that's the only situation where I condone divorce or getting away. Otherwise, suck it up, buttercup. Kids need you to have an intact home. Everything else you said, I loved.
Okay. I'm not gonna dispute you.
God bless your heart. William Belfort, pleasure to have you here, my man. From mess to success, find it on Amazon. Listener, William is the real deal. This is a man who's been at the highest of heights. He's been humbled by life, and he's climbed back up. He's a man who's willing to share his heart, and he's helped people who've been even more down and out than him raise themselves out of feeling tragic to becoming magic. Take advantage of the offer that he's given. Go to his website, williambelfortmd.com. Book a call with him, because he can help you. If you're having mental health issues, if you are not where you want to be and you think right now you could use someone to talk to, you should take advantage of this. You should absolutely take advantage of this. William, thanks for coming on the show, brother. Great to have you here.
It was a pleasure. It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
You bet, my man. And that wraps up another exciting episode of the podcast, The Thought Leader Revolution. To find out more about the great William Belfort, go to williambelfortmd.com or the show notes at thethoughtleaderrevolution.com or wherever you happen to listen to this episode, be it iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Audible, or what have you. Until next time, bye-bye.